Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Newtown Theatre. Please welcome a man who thinks there might have been another ghost in his dressing room just now. He's not sure. It's Richard Herring. Oh, my, oh, my. Thank you very much. Oh, Colin's here. We can all relax. Oh, thank you so much for coming along. I don't know what day it is, but I'm guessing it's the weekend. There's lots of you. Oh, shit. It's all going wrong. And welcome to Richard Herring's Let's Strangle Teenagers podcast. New direction. Just if there are any people in the audience under 20 but over 12, with the rest of us are going to murder on the Orient Express style or kill you. And we'll get away with it because we'll just say someone came in and strangled the... Any teenagers in? Weird. I thought we were pretty safe. Though I was crossing the meadows just now and there were some guys playing five-a-side football against each other. And the team who were wearing the yellow bibs, they call it Rahulastapa. I'd never thought about football very much and I've never played five-a-side football. But if you are the team in five-a-side football who are wearing the yellow bibs... You are going to lose. That is. You've made the decision that you are prepared to wear the yellow bibs. You've already given up, I think, haven't you? The other team are the alpha males. They are better at football than you. I watched it for 5 minutes and it was proved correct. The yellow bib guys were rubbish. Sorry if you're listening at home, guys. It's just the truth. I was up in the dressing room and we got up there and one of the guests was here and then one of the guests arrived later and there was a little tiny man in a tartan suit sitting in the dressing room. I said hello to him, he didn't say anything to me. He just sat there. I was just back to the toilet and then he went to the toilet. I was quite annoyed, it's my toilet. And then when I came out, he'd gone. So I think I might be going crazy already. Is this really only show 8? Please let me go home. Is there 2 weeks to go still? Why? Why am I doing this? This is the last time I'm ever doing the Edinburgh Fringe. I say that every year. This is year 25. What about this Edinburgh weather? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's got bad, hasn't it? It's got bad, Liam.
8 days in. But like yesterday, I was soaked coming in, and then I left, and it was fucking like the Caribbean outside. And I'm pretty certain that we're in a kind of Truman Show bubble here, and someone's just fucking around with the weather for a lot. That is, I've been to Edinburgh a lot. I've never experienced it being. I'm pretty sure I'm going to go out after this show when it finishes at 2:30, and it's going to be nighttime, and that's going to prove it. Prove to me what is going on here. So hopefully my guest is. Well, no, let me do this. I should remind people here and at home, we are here for another 13 performances after this one. Please do come along. And I'm also on tour throughout the autumn. If you go to richherring.com and click on me going like that, oh, you can't see at home, you'll be able to see all the tour dates. In September, I'm in Brighton, Leicester, Bristol and Richmond. Bristol selling out, but the rest of them could do with some help. I should truly try and book some people, but I haven't quite booked everyone for this yet. We were trying to ask whether men are funny in this Edinburgh. It seems to be a female-dominated Edinburgh, which I'm very happy about. That's more chicks for me, right? we got 5 or 6 slots still to fill. This is what a feminist looks like, darling, all right? Yeah, that's it. So far on this show, we've booked 22 women to 16 men, so I'm going to have to book like a sketch group of those guys pulling the funny faces. I'm going to have to get a few of those guys in to get the male average up. And coming up in Edinburgh, we do have Arabella Weir, George Egg, who's fantastic, Richard Osman, Tony Slattery's on tomorrow, Fern Brady, Lauren Patterson, loads of fantastic guests to come. So please do come and see it. You can see another one if you've seen today. You're allowed. Liam, have you seen everything? You're going to win a prize if whoever sees the most shows. I think it's going to be. Has anyone else seen every single one of these so far in Edinburgh? No, you're going to win, Liam. You're going to win a prize. Unless they've just not turned up this one day. Anyway, let's crack straight on. My first guest today is probably best known for being the winner of the Deadly Funny Grand Final 2014. Her act killed over 500 people. But it's all right, they were Australian, so it didn't matter. Will you please welcome the incredible Steph Tisdall, ladies and gentlemen?
Welcome. Thank you very much. Hello. Come in. Pull up a microphone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ooh. How are you doing, Steph?
Well, I think this is the first time an Aboriginal woman's ever sat in a throne, so good.
I think, yeah. Ashley was saying she was probably the first woman, Catholic woman, to be on this stage yesterday. I'd be very surprised if the Masons of Edinburgh have ever invited...
An Aboriginal Australian woman.
Yeah. and let them sit down anyway. So they're getting a terrible time for me, the Masons, on this show. I won't be invited back. I'm sure they're above board and they've never killed any women. I'm sure that is... I'd just like to state that as a fact. Well, it's lovely to have you part of the Aboriginal All-Stars
show. That's right. We've almost sold out tonight, but you could still get tickets.
Wow. So is it 3 acts in the show?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got Andrew Saunders,
yeah.
Kevin Crepinieri, and me, Steph Tisdall.
Okay.
And it's like comedy you've never seen before because it's Aboriginal people. You've probably never seen an Aboriginal person before. Am I your first?
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you.
Have you ever been outside of Edinburgh? Yeah, you have. Okay, well, that's impressive.
Well, I used to live here, so we didn't meet then.
You're not my first Aboriginal performer I've ever had on this podcast. I've had Craig Quatermain.
Well, there you go.
You know Craig?
Yes.
Yeah. Just, you know.
I do, yeah.
Because he's a comedian.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all the Aborigines hang around together.
He's actually
is Aborigines the right word to use? That I mean, you're using it yourself. Is it Indigenous people? Because it's...
Do you know what? I find it hard. I don't think we should be getting caught up in terms, considering everything else that's gone to shit. You know what I mean? I think we should maybe ask for some policy to be changed before we start going, wait, do we want to be First Nations or Aboriginal? That's just what I reckon anyway.
Yeah, well, you've quite recently come to comedy. You were starting out as an advocate for Aboriginal rights, is that right?
Yeah, so like, well, I actually studied law and journalism because I wanted to change things. And then somebody dared me to do comedy.
Yeah.
And I was just drunk in a bar in Dublin. And it wasn't even a comedy place. It wasn't even a microphone. I stood on a chair and just went, oh, I've got to do some comedy. And then... I was like, if I'm any good, buy me a drink. If I'm shit, I'll definitely know. And then I had drinks on the bar from everyone.
Wow.
And then I went home and did like maybe one or two.
So you ad-libbed just that. You completely Mrs. Maisel'd it. That's what happens in the amazing, marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She basically goes on stage drunk and ad-libs an incredible set. And
that's pretty
most
much
comedians
what
go, that can never happen in real life, though. But that's pretty much what you just went on, emptied your heart.
Pretty much.
A comedian.
Well, it was just so many things that I found funny. Like, I pretty much just told stories about my dad.
Right.
Because he's an idiot.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you want an
yeah,
example?
Yeah, well, tell us what's the most idiotic thing your dad's done.
Well, no, he's not he's a neighbourhood vigilante. That's what we call him. Like, he's such a beautiful man. He's so principled that, like, you mess with his neighbourhood and he's going to fuck you up. That's, like, his whole MO. Right, so these kids, this is really ridiculous. There were these kids who kept on stealing letterboxes from our street. Like, who does that? And my dad was like, I'm going to find these kids and I'm going to teach them a lesson. We're like, well, can you really put revenge on teenagers, Dad? Like, you're a fully grown man. And he went out and he, like, waited for them on the street and then punched one. Wow. And he got this bee in his bonnet when like, everyone was first starting to talk about global warming. Right? He got this real bee in his bonnet. And I don't know why he did this. I was still at school, right? And he built these two massive sandwich boards that on one side said global warming and on the other side said act now, just so that I could be a target for everyone at school, you know? And then one night he heard some kids destroying his signs and he was like, not today. Not when global warming is looming. And so I think he's the softest man. I don't know where this came from in his head. He's a really light sleeper, so he hears them. And we had this 50-metre long driveway, right? And there was a street light right on the bottom of it. And so instead of going out and punching some more kids, as he's wont to do, he just thought he'd threaten them. So he stood at the top of the driveway with the street light backlighting him with a fucking machete and just went, oi! And they got so scared, they were like, he's got a machete. And then they just ran.
Yeah. Presumably he's in prison now for attacking children. Is that allowed in Australia now? Maybe it is. It's a crazy country, Australia.
That's why it's funny, because if you met him, you'd be like, oh, this is the sweetest man in the world. I'm like, ask him how many kids he's punched.
They do deserve punching. I'm on his side. You're not allowed to. It's annoying, isn't it, right? Especially other people. You're allowed to punch your own a bit, right? Two-year-old. What would you say, what are the biggest myths about Aboriginal culture, would you say, that you get?
Oh.
I mean, I'm assuming you are telepathic and can communicate over large distances.
No, that one is true.
Yeah,
so I would say probably the biggest one is people will go, you're not Aboriginal, right? And it's because, you know, like you look at the colour of my skin and you go, all right, well, she's not whatever we're picturing in your head. Like, I always tell people, you know, like my dad, because my dad's white, my dad looks a bit like Santa, right? And my mum looks like whatever you're picturing on the front of a National Geographic magazine with the titties out. Hey, I'm obviously lying, don't. My dad looks nothing like Santa. No, just the idea that you have to give up your Aboriginality if there's any bit of white heritage. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this is kind of the message or the lesson that needs to be sent now is that the reason why my complexion is as much Aboriginal as anybody else is because of the Stolen Generation. And for people who don't know about the Stolen Generation, I'll give you a little quick history lesson. So up until 1965, when the Assimilation Act ended, they used to take children who had any white heritage in them and take them to Christian missions to civilize them. And they were slaves, and there was a lot of bad things that happened. At the same time, they had propaganda up that said, let's breed the black out. So it was like encouraging rape and all of that sort of stuff, right? But also, it was only 1967 that the referendum was passed to allow us to be counted in the census. Yeah. So before then, we were fauna and flora. And considering how recent that is, it, you know, it makes a lot of sense that there is so many different colours of Aboriginal because that's what history asked to happen to us, you know?
Yeah, well, it's Australia's this... I've been a couple of times in this bit, and it's been like nearly 20 years since I've been out there. Mm. But it's this weird country because it's very progressive in some ways, and it feels like a cool version of America in a lot of ways. And then that the race thing, I mean, not just racism against the Aboriginal people, but Asian people and everyone is so extreme.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we drove to Uluru, or Ayers Rock, as it's called by the European people. And so we went through all the towns and, you know, you see this completely different Australia.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's really interesting as well is that, you know, obviously Australia's a first world country, but there are big parts of Australia where the Aboriginal people are pushed to that are pretty much like developing countries.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because the government says it's not economical for us to keep these communities alive. And you're like, you're the reason they were pushed into this area in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's also one of these things where, and this is, I think this is the sad thing and this is the thing that needs to change, is that there's this idea that all of the social issues that exist as a result of generational trauma and being on the outer have come, like all of the social issues, so substance abuse and stuff like that, right? It's seen as a symptom of being Aboriginal instead of a symptom of absolutely being on the outer and striving for, you know, like only just being let into Australian society within the last 50 years.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I think really needs to change.
I mean, to a lesser extent, I think that's true of all over the world, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Is the way that the minority groups or the kept down groups are treated in that same way, and then that self-perpetuating myth.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just empathy over apathy.
Yeah.
Is what needs to happen, I think. You know.
And so, do you find that comedy is the best way to kind of address this in Australia? Is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Abosolutely. Sorry. No, don't say that. don't say that's a bad word. yeah, absolutely. Well, because you know, like if you're an Indigenous performer, you're kind of expected to either be a traditional dancer, traditional musician, traditional artist. And it's only sort of been quite recently where there's been this real push for truth telling. And I think that's all that comedy is. It's vulnerable truth telling that you can just sew those messages in while people are laughing, and it's like, I love doing it. I love watching people just get real uncomfortable too.
Yeah. Well, you talk about white guilt versus overt racism is one of your themes.
Oh, well, because white guilt's the funniest shit. Like, I don't know, if I said to you, like, we might be able to watch it in action. Hold on a second. So you know how some of your ancestors killed mine?
Yeah.
There's always this little like, it's no, I love watching it happen.
Yeah.
And people just there's it's kind of cute. Like there's such a sweetness to it, but it's so cringe. Like it's just so cringe. Like I had this Sorry Day was when our government recognised Stolen Generation and said sorry for it, right? And I went out that night. And this woman, this young girl comes up to me, drunk off her face, and goes, excuse me, are you Indigenous? And I was like, yeah, I am. And she went, can I just say on behalf of myself and all of Australia that I'm sorry? So, I mean, you can, but you look like a dickhead, you know? Like, just how cringe is that? A 19-year-old being like, I speak for Australia.
But I mean, having a sorry day seems like a little bit, like a bit too little too late as well.
Exactly.
Sorry. Oops, sorry about Tasmania. Oh, bye. thanks.
Well, exactly.
See you next year for another sorry day.
After Australia Day, Well, we celebrate the day we came anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you can understand, it's more than embarrassing. It's a little bit embarrassing it's interesting that now that people are starting to address it, but you can sort of understand why people were white guilt was more than white guilt, was you know, if we can push this away, then we don't have to address it at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. And it's such an interesting thing because I think most people have no real understanding of you know, if you're in the city and you see an Aboriginal person and they've got a job, like, you're like, I don't know what their problem is. Everything's fine. But, like, but the reality is, like, that, you know, we're, I think, 5 or 6 times more likely to be incarcerated in small community. To give you an idea, 2014, they were doing the forced closure of Aboriginal communities. So there used to be a small island off the west coast of Australia that had Indigenous people on it, and they forced them all off the island and pushed them into a little community on the outskirts of somewhere in Western... It's Perth, I don't give a fuck. And and then they said, oh, well, there's only 100 people living here. It's not economical for us to keep on providing them with electricity and water. And they were trying to close it down and just had no plans for where they were going to put the people. That was 2014. Yeah. And it didn't make news headlines. It only made news headlines in Indigenous circles. Because it's embarrassing. And genocide usually is embarrassing, you know?
Yeah, you've got to do it...
That's the sound of white guilt, fuckers.
You've got to do it completely or not at all. That's my thing with genocide.
Absolutely.
Either get the lot or don't start.
Otherwise you get advocates like me. That's right.
And I mean, your website, so you've got a blog on your website. There's a couple of great, again, quite serious blogs on there about things. There's one about you being brought up in Brisbane and the way that you're treated as a result of the sort of stuff you're talking about. But it's very interesting. So you're trying to get more knowledge of your own particular tribe.
Absolutely. Well, we lost our language.
Yeah.
So it was illegal to talk your language. So in my particular family history, my great-grandfather, who was the head of our tribe, for him to make sure that the kids weren't taken or killed, he had to get an exemption card. Now, we have all of these in archives, and the exemption card said... So he had to go to a magistrate and get them to say, well, he's one of the good ones, so as long as he stays away from other black people, doesn't speak his language, and takes a huge pay cut, which slavery was literally getting... It was indentured service.
Yeah.
Then we won't take his kids. But every single child that got to a certain age had to go through the exemption process.
Yeah.
And then there was a really awful thing because my auntie's mum was taken away to one of the missions, and it was because her white husband, who just saw her as a bit of a plaything, prostituted her out and beat her and then told the police that she was a prostitute, even though he was doing it. And so then that kid was taken. That's my auntie now, and they didn't even name her. There's no reference to her name in any of the archives. It says the Aboriginal girl. Right. And it, you know, so it's like, it's all of this. So what's happened in our tribe, and it's a very common story, especially along the east coast of Australia, is that we weren't allowed to speak language, we weren't allowed to practice our traditional customs or anything like that. And so a lot of it's lost. And then, you know, my mum made the decision, because she grew up in a very racist little town, to raise us in a big city where we had opportunities. And then you become even further removed from it. And then all of a sudden you're stuck with this identity crisis of, well, I've got all of the advantages of being in a city and I could just tell people I'm Italian, like I could get away with this. And then also going, but if I don't continue on my culture, it dies with this generation. Because we've still got some elders who have some knowledge and they're relearning the language. So if I don't pursue that, if I'm not an advocate, if I'm not actively trying to get our message out, we've wiped out our history.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. It's a really weird one to walk.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm sort of fascinated by the way that humanity is spread around the globe, and the story of the Aboriginal people is so incredible because somehow people got from Africa. I mean, again, no one's entirely sure about this, but people got from Africa in sort of 70,000, 50,000 years ago and got to Australia.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of insane. So that journey of those people.
Or maybe
in the last 10, 20, 30,000 years, something like that.
No, they've actually found bones that go back to about 90,000
really?
Years.
Okay, yeah.
So now they're all a bit like, where the fuck did they come from?
Yeah.
But there's actually interesting research that's just come out recently that seems to... They seem to think that when... Remember when continents looked different? I don't know. Is that going to happen again? I don't know. Anyway.
Eventually it will all kind of come... Pangea, I think it was when the whole... everyone was clumped together.
Yeah. So it was kind of... Remember, was it Gondwanaland? Is that a thing?
Yes, there's one person.
Thank you. That sounds Aboriginal, doesn't it? Gondwana. Anyway, you don't know. I do. no, I don't. I lost my language. Don't laugh. come to my show. I feel guilty the whole time. they've done some research. They think that we sort of migrated down through Asia and Papua New Guinea. And so somewhere in Asia, somewhere in Papua New Guinea. So, like, we're so connected all the way back. It's super interesting. But they also said I can't even remember what this research that I read was, but it was like to start a completely new country and tribe and have enough, like, diversity in genetics, it was had to be planned so well that they were like, they had to walk with 8,000 people and all separate at different parts. It was very, very much a planned, mapped trip, which is kind of incredible.
And, you know, and then those people then wiped out all the amazing indigenous creatures in Australia. So, it's just the human story, isn't it? It's just what we do. We travel around and then destroy everything until there's nothing left apart from some rocks. Those giant kangaroos would have been great. I wish they were still around.
Oh, yes.
With massive ones.
The big ones, yeah. Creepy things.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Fucking terrifying.
I'd love to eat one of those. I start to see how it happened now. oh, my goodness. It's been very interesting. We've got taken down. What have I got? You're dating a ginger man. Is that still the case?
I am dating a ginger.
Yeah. It's good
to
see.
They're easier to get. Not just because he's always injured from the sunburn, but, you know.
good to know. It's very well worth it. You talk about tokenism a bit in your blog as well, I think. Just it really annoys me, the kind of people who get upset about, you know, female comedians at all, you know, going, why are they putting two female writers on... on a show, this ITV insisted there was a female writer on every sketch show, and people going, "This is tokenism. It's insane." And at what point are you getting angry that there's one woman and not that there's eight blokes? And so, like, if there's 3% or something of Australians Aboriginal, so three in every 100 comedians in Australia should be Aboriginal.
Oh, we've got like five in total. So,
that idea of tokenism is insane. It's sort of saying, I don't think that certain races are amusing, is what you're saying, isn't it? Which is, you know...
Yeah, I know. I used to get really upset about it because I go, well, I don't want to just be an Aboriginal comedian. I actually found it really hard. I never used to do comedy about my heritage because I was really scared. I was terrified of how people would take it, number one. Number two, I just thought if I ever get success, it will always be, oh, well, of course she got gigs because she's Aboriginal and a woman. And so I never prefaced it. I never talked about it. And then I lived in Edinburgh for a couple of years and I told a friend of mine a story about Australia and about being black, and she said, that's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And I told it on stage. Can I tell it?
Yeah.
Because this is the funniest thing. This will show to you how ignorant Australia is, right? So we have this really...
I think really we've got it already, but let's really nail it. Hello, Australian listeners. Just hoping to go out there at some point and ruin that. Come.
But to me, this is so funny. This is what started me going, hey, I can use this stage to make people laugh and say something important. So back home, we have this really famous albino humpback whale. And he's done so much for international tourism. Seriously, right? Like, this whale is the only one in the world. And so when he came into Australia, everyone was like, oh, my God, let's give him a name, you know. And then somebody was like, we should probably let the black people name it. Feels fair. And so they consulted with some elders actually up near where my tribe is from, right? And they gave it a name. And to be fair, it is an Aboriginal name, right? Yeah. So this whale's name is Migaloo. But to be more fair, Migaloo, where I'm from, and throughout most of Aboriginal Australia, does mean white cunt. And nobody researched it. And I was like, yeah, fuck, that does belong on stage. Like, yeah. That's too good. Yeah. And that's what started me going, yeah, there's so much funny, ridiculous shit that just, if you can laugh at it, it doesn't hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it is a good way to inform. But, you know, those are important. Everything you've said, you know, people aren't aware of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you've got a platform to explain that stuff's happened and, you know, and still going on, it's really important. But, you know, it is important also to be funny, which you definitely are. Look, hopefully I'll get to talk to you again another time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really fantastic to meet you. Well, tell everyone where your show is so they can come see it.
So it's at Assembly Studio 4 at 3:55 every day. It's called Aboriginal Comedy All Stars. We've got Andy Saunders, who is on a huge reality TV show back home at the moment. He beatboxes and dances, and he's awesome. We've got Kevin Crepinieri, who's one generation away from a dirt floor, has got the most amount of love and energy and sweat you've ever seen a man have. and then me. Yeah. But it's a really good show, and we've been selling out. We want to continue to do so.
Yeah, so get
it's
tickets quick.
Time. Yeah, first
it's not like
time
this show. You can turn up on the day on this show, but it's on.
But it's the first time that a showcase as of a Melbourne Comedy Festival is producing us. They've gone, we need to show the world the best Aboriginal comedians.
And, well, it's what the festival and the Fringe is all about, so it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And welcome back to us, to Scotland.
Thank you so much. Hey, thank you so much.
Steph Tisdale. Hey. Brilliant, thank you very much. Look, I hope you've got a programme at the beginning. That's a free gift from me to you. What I'm doing with this show is, as I do with all my stand-up shows, at the end of the show I make a collection for Scope, which is the charity I'm involved with, which helps disabled people in trying to get equal rights and access for disabled people. If you think that programme was worth something you'd like to donate, on your way out, there'll either be holding buckets or there might be a bucket on my table. I have a little table in the doorway I've been relegated to, where I'll be very happy to sign your programme, do selfies, and I am selling copies of both my new Emergency Questions book at a knockdown price and my old Emergency Questions book. There's mainly different questions, and there's some stickers as well. Very happy to sell you one of those. But if you would like to give some money to Scope, please give it in the bucket or text the number in your program if you're from the future, because no one has money. I don't carry money anymore. Do you carry money, sir? No. You do? Yeah. How much you got on you now? £15 in the bucket, please. Thank you very much. So, you've just proofed that you have money. So, it'd be lovely to see you there. I've got a card reader and everything. So, you know, I mean, it's like a shop that I run. Sell up to 5 books a day.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
My second guest today is probably best known for appearing in the play The One and the Many by Tiny Face Trevor Locke. Have you got that reference? He was from Trevor and Natalie from this morning, Richard Not Judy. I was singing that to myself the other day. I thought more people might remember him, but nope. Will you please welcome the amazing Jen Brister, ladies and gentlemen?
Hello. How are you doing? Pull up the microphone.
Oh, I like that you chose the most obscure reference with which to introduce me.
I did, that's what I do. It's my hilarious running joke. Thank you for enjoying it. It was hard to find anything, because everything you've done has been superb.
Oh, thank you, Richard.
Apart from Trevor Locke's useless play.
Trevor Locke is wonderful. He's a dear friend of mine, and his play was marvellous in 2009, and the 11 people that saw it thoroughly enjoyed it.
So. He's on in Edinburgh this year as well, and you must go.
He's fantastic. Go and see Trevor.
He's got a very small face on a regular-sized head. How did you act against that? Was he acting with you?
Just in the middle of his face.
Really in the middle. Mm. Must be hard to know where to look when you're acting with that.
Just keep it central.
Right in, but then that look, people go, why is she looking right at his nose? And then if you look at his eyes, why is she not looking at his face like Charlie from...
Look at his cock and that saves that problem.
So welcome. I've been reading your book. Because I have children myself, I find it quite hard to read books.
I don't have the
downfall.
Concentration. I don't have the concentration to read a book. I don't know how I managed to write that, but there we are.
The Other Mother. It's called The Other Mother.
Yes.
Because you have... four-year-old twin boys.
I have four-year-old twin boys with my partner, which we're not solicitors, Lezzers. yes, there's two of us, so two mums. I am the non-biological mum. She is the biological mum. And that is how we refer to each other at home. So there we are. Like we're boxes of detergent. She's personal, I'm Daz. That's how we do it.
It's a very readable book, and I have got a certain way in, but I haven't read it all, so I don't know what happens at the end.
Oh,
It just keeps growing bigger.
It just carries on.
They leave home and go somewhere else.
I wanted to write the book. The reason why I started writing the book, I think, by the way, Richard, well done on this podcast. You've had an Aboriginal woman.
Yes.
And a Lezzer.
Yeah.
I mean, you're nailing it.
Thank you.
This diversity quota, he can have white straight men for the rest of the run because he's absolutely nailed it.
If I could find any, there are not, honestly, it's all. No. I haven't had a single show with two men on yet. It's going to happen quite soon.
Absolutely none worth knowing. The Masons must have been absolutely. When they were building this, they went, this is what we want. This is why we built this. Have an Aboriginal woman and a Lezzo. Wanging on. So I wanted to write the book because. I don't know. I mean, as a dad, did you want to read any dad books before your children were born?
My wife was obsessed with reading all the books.
So was
mine. And I thought, I want to wing it. I want to work out how to do it myself.
But that's classic stand-up comedian. Yeah. That's what we do. We just wing it. We're like, all right, just turn up. How bad can it get? Throw a couple of beer cans at me, I'll survive it.
And I also thought all the books, it's the same thing. When we got a dog and when we got children, the same thing happens. Everyone gives you the advice on how to do it, how to bring them up, and it's all different advice.
So you ignore all of it.
Yeah, so you've got to ignore all of it, because everyone just says, this is how you have a dog, and this is how you have a baby.
And also, a lot of those books are very prescriptive, aren't they? Yeah. So they like people take a line with parenting, and they go, yeah, this is how you do it. And you're like, it's not working for me. So I wanted to write a book, A, that was not prescriptive in any way, that basically went, I don't know what I'm doing. And also one that sort of just reflected my experience because there was nothing for my situation.
No.
Absolutely nothing at all. So I thought, there are other Lezzers out there, I believe. Squeezed in.
It'd be amazing if you'd found the only one.
That would be incredible, wouldn't it? I mean, you'd think my career would be going a lot better, wouldn't you? But no. And so that's why I wanted to write it. And I was writing a kind of a blog anyway for Sarah Millican's website, Standard Issue.
Yeah.
And that was the start of it. And I got a lot of emails and messages and feedback going, really loved it. It's really... And a lot of people that didn't even have children were reading it, which I thought was weird. So I got a book proposal together and then I managed to get a book deal.
Yeah.
And that was it. So I started writing it.
Yeah, but I think with all these things, like people have an idea about how things should be,
and then they don't ever experience anyone else's life. And so the great thing about just a book like that is you go, oh, this is these are just two other people having a baby.
Oh my
it's
God.
The same as what happened to us, or it's the same as what might happen to us.
Yeah.
But it's different. But it's, you know, it's interesting. So it's you know, it's incredibly that it's incredible that people could be that stupid.
Yes.
But that's what people are like, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when it's because, oh God, I don't want to give the white straight men in the room here a hard time, but I bloody well will. it's because that is whatever the societal norm is, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the pH 7. That's what we understand to be the natural, what we should all be aspiring to be. And so anything outside of that is considered other. So even in stand-up comedy, as a woman, I will be a female comedian. I'm not a comedian. I'm a female comedian, or if they get bored of that, then I'm a lesbian. I'm a gay comedian. But if you are a man and you're white, you are just a comedian. And it's very much the same in parenting. If you are a heterosexual couple, you are just parents. But if you are in a lesbian relationship, or you're in a gay relationship, or you're trans, or whatever, then you're othered for, you know. And essentially, all of the experiences that we're having are universal. And I just wanted to go, see,
yeah.
Look, it's the same. If you have children, they are going to do all. They all do the same. They do the same things, don't they? And before they arrive, you have the delusion that you're like, I'm just going to. Did you have this thing that before your children were born, where you think, I'm just going to want to spend every waking hour with them? And then they're like, they're five now, and you're like, oh God, are you still here? Why are you still here?
I remember, like, when Phoebe was just born, and I was, like, the first couple of days, and I would, you know, they'd been up and down all night, and I was sitting in bed sort of with my computer writing my blog and thinking, actually, this is going to really work, this is going to really help me to write, because I'm going to be awake for this time, and I can really concentrate,
yeah.
It's going to be perfect. Yeah, that wasn't the case.
How did she sleep?
I'm not straight away. She's been pretty good sleeper. Ernie, my second one, is not a good sleeper, so he's been waking up. Today it was 6:15 rather than 5:15, but he's been waking up in Edinburgh singing his version of Baby Shark every morning. Is how I wake up hearing a child go, na na na, daddy, na na daddy.
If I never hear that song again, that will be okay
yeah.
by me.
Yeah.
Mine didn't sleep for 3 years,
yeah.
So I don't know if anyone else can top that. And that kind of sleep deprivation is deathly. It's, you know, like you'd meet people. You know when mates are like, oh, I'm tired, and you're like, oh, yeah. I went out last night and got drunk. Got him at 3, got up at 7. Oh, you got 4 hours. Right in the throat, you know? Yeah, it becomes all-consuming. And the thing about being a parent, the thing I've loved about being a parent is probably the fact that it keeps you... I hate that whole mindfulness. Anytime anyone talks about that, it makes me want to just throw up. But actually, it's true. Just keep your children, keep you in the present, and I've really enjoyed that, because there is a danger in this job to be constantly thinking, why haven't I got this, and why isn't this happening in my life, and then your children do shit in your shoes and you're like, okay, let's deal with that. So I've you know, the thing is it's that sort of strange dichotomy that like with your children, that you love them and you adore them and you think about them all the time and they consume your life, because there's that intense love, isn't there, that you're not expecting. And even though, particularly as somebody that is not biologically related to my children, I did think that what if I don't know, I thought, and I say it in the book, what if they turn up and I don't like them,
yeah.
You know. And I did fall in love with them. It wasn't immediate, but I definitely did fall in love with them. And then there's the other thing where you realise that they've, you know, just completely ruined your life. And it's really hard to reconcile those two things. But I think the fact that there is a lot of great PR and people don't tend to be honest about how awful it is, or if they're not enjoying it, like, frequently, if you're in those mum and baby groups and you ask people, they're like, oh, how are you doing? Oh, we're just wonderful. We're just having such a month. Just really connecting with my daughter, and just, you know, we're just baking, and you're like, she's 3 months, what the fuck are you doing? You're putting her in the mix? I mean, what? And I was genuinely struggling. I was struggling, and I was not very good at it, and I would frequently go out and forget nappies, or be the person to forget wet wipes, and I'd just be seen in a park wiping my kid's ass along some grass, and trying to keep some self-respect. And I wanted to write a book that just said, look, if you're... And also, there is a huge... I think, and obviously I didn't go through this because I've not, you know, obviously didn't give birth to my children, but a postnatal depression is a huge thing that we don't talk about, and the fact that some mothers and fathers just don't immediately connect with their children, and the fact that it isn't always great, and you feel lonely, and you can feel a bit depressed, yeah. And even if you love your child, you can still be like, this is the worst time of my life. So I just wanted to have a book that just went, if that is your experience, then don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You're not alone, and that's normal, and you will get through it, and it does get better.
Yeah, and the things that are different, of course, with two mothers is that, you know, again, that you don't necessarily think about, but obviously it's a big part, that there was no sperm available, which seems unfair, the amount of sperm that lesbians have created and been responsible for.
I know.
It's not there for you. You have to go and find it somewhere.
Well, you don't have to look long. You just sort of...
I mean, I'd have saved some up in a pot for you if I'd known you were...
We just creep in, and while you fellas are sleeping, just them are out of there. And
But you had to go... You went. You've got to select...
Oh, the selecting of the sperm is absurd. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's...
I mean, I suppose everyone else does that.
Well, you do sort of select the sperm, don't you? It's not like sort of randomly milking men in the Wetherspoons. It looks all right. Look over there, fella. It is interesting when you're selecting your sperm because, some of you, I assume a lot of you won't know this, but there are lots of different sperm banks. There's not just one. Each one will give you different amounts of information. What you never get is a photograph. You've got no idea what your sperm donor looks like, but you can get all kinds of information, like their medical history up to a certain point, and their height, their weight, their interests, what they do for a living. Some sperm banks offer you an IQ, which is a bit bonkers, and also the sperm bank that we chose gave a recording of him talking, and you get a picture of them as a child. And all of the others. And I'm still not sure why we chose this bloke, because he was really obnoxious in the recording. I was like, this guy's a real douche. I think the reason why we chose him is just because there was one line from one of the nurses in the sperm bank that went, this guy is really hot. And we went, fine, we'll have him. Really thick and annoying, but beautiful.
But to be honest, that's why the way most women have chosen their
partners. Their men, yeah.
It's fine. It's good to see that somewhere deep inside you that still works. Choosing the worst possible man.
Just keep that cycle going of creating the worst men.
I can't wait to read the rest of it in over the next 18 years as I can read one page at a time.
Yeah.
But is it out yet? Is it out soon, or is it out?
It's out on the 5th of September.
Right. Okay.
And and also it is a book, and it is about. Oh, it's a book. Do I need to tell you that?
Yeah.
It's a parenting book, but it's not really. I think I wrote it because I wanted it to be funny, and that was first and foremost what I wanted to write, was a funny book. And a lot of people that have read it, you know, that I've given it to, don't have children and have enjoyed it. So obviously you'll get an extra layer of enjoyment if you have children, certainly. But if you don't, it's still just a funny book.
Yeah.
I hope I've made that clear.
It definitely is. Is your Edinburgh show this year Underprivileged?
Yes, my show is called Underprivileged, and it's at 7:45 at the Monkey Barrel. And it's basically, again, I sort of started writing it because it's not really about my children, but they are definitely a catalyst for the show, looking at privilege because they are obviously little white boys and they're going to grow up to be white men, and looking at their privilege and what they have compared to what I've got, and also how I want them, who I want them to be. So I'm looking at the privilege through the prism of their eyes, basically. And that's what... It's funny. I mean, I've really not made it sound funny. It's not a TED Talk. There are only jokes in there. You will enjoy it.
But you have done a TED Talk about that subject, roughly.
I did a TEDx talk about toxic masculinity and bringing up your children to... Yeah, within a patriarchal society, and how the patriarchy is toxic for men as well as for women.
But it's in... You know, we had John Robbins on the other day, and he was talking about... you know, being more open as a man and communicating with, you know, I think people forget how hard it is for young men and how hard it is for men, and that they don't talk about these subjects. And so I think, like, just being open to, you know, you're talking about letting them be who they want to be in that TED Talk, aren't you? And how emotionally open, like, a four-year-old boy is, and that we knock that out to them, you know.
Yeah, I think we kick it out of boys, and so that when they become adolescent, then they're told, okay, you've had your time to be able to express yourself, and now just bury that forever until the day you die. And then we're sort of surprised when men find it difficult to communicate their feelings or might use other means of ways of expressing themselves, whether it be aggression or in a way that is, you know, I suppose, that we now consider socially unacceptable. And so we create men to be in a particular way and then we punish them. And it's just a means of saying that we as a society are responsible for allowing young boys to have a valve to be who they are and let that continue until they're men and forever. And if you want to have a cry, fellas, just cry. You're allowed.
And just be, you know, I think just allowing men and boys and to talk about stuff and to be allowed to be different, because there is this weird pressure. And I remember it from school, and I was not a very boy-y boy, you know.
No.
And I wasn't a very sporty boy, and I wasn't interested in things boys were meant to be interested in.
Same.
And it's difficult to address that, because the peer pressure is to conform to that certain way, and for girls as well, to be fair. So it's not like just a male problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit easier now, but we still do push certain, like the whole blue-pink thing. You know, if you go into any toy store, if you go into any shop where they're selling clothes, you will see all the boys' clothes are blue and all the girls' clothes are pink. And, my boys, I mean, one of them definitely, like, since he was born, I mean, he was a baby, he'd, like, scream if he saw a truck and we'd have to stop and look at a truck for, like, 10 minutes. And the other one just loves getting dressed up as a ladybird. So, stop. And whatever they want to do, we want them to be able to do it and be able to express themselves. So if they, you know, we never, if one of them wants to get put on a dress, then he's totally, and I know that people are like, oh, you're going to setting him up to, you know, have a hard time when he's older. And I'm like, I don't think so. And if it gets to the point where he's like, okay, I really can only feel comfortable doing this at home, then I want him to know that he can just do it at home. Things are going to get harder because they start school in September, and I know that they're going to experience peer pressure and they're going to be told what is considered normal, but we are in Brighton, so I think we'll be all right.
I feel sorry for the kids with just a heterosexual couple as parents in Brighton. Imagine that
we tolerate them. We tolerate them. And their heady ways.
And you're a fantastic stand-up. You can check you out online if you haven't seen stuff yet. I was very much enjoying your Apollo set about eating ice creams behind a bin, because the only way you can eat an ice cream as a parent, as I ate an ice cream out
behind
inside
the
freezer
garden.
Today. I just stood in the freezer and ate an ice cream while my kids are watching telly. Because I've told my daughter she can't have ice cream for breakfast.
No.
I love having lollies for breakfast. So I stood inside the freezer and ate a Tangle Twister so fast that I couldn't enjoy it.
It's so true. Like, you're telling them they can't have something, and then as soon as you say it, you're like behind a cupboard door just ramming a ball-pong biscuit into it. Yeah.
But and your mum's Spanish, right?
Yes, I have a Spanish mum, yeah. So she has featured a lot in my stand-up over the years, but she's not really in this show. No. She's got a tiny, tiny cameo, but no, people seem to be a bit disappointed she's not in it more.
Really?
But she did say to me, actually, no, Jennifer, no more, it's enough. Write a joke. Because really, I just listen to her and go, yep, thank you very much. I just want that done.
It's very funny stuff with her. What else have I got here? I'm going to ask you some emergency questions, because otherwise these people will get nothing. They'll be very upset if they don't have enough. They've come all this way, Colin, haven't they? For no emergency questions. I won't ask you about this. There is a question about sperm banks, but I can't quite remember what it is. But part of it is, would you rather drink the contents of a well-stocked sperm bank? I can't remember what the other option is off the top of my head. I'm guessing you'll go for the other one.
Sure that wouldn't be the one I'd go for.
Given my
gag reflex.
Let me ask, have you ever seen a ghost? I'm enjoying asking people if they've ever seen a ghost. I'm
going to
say you've never seen a ghost. Yeah, I was going to predict that. Never seen one, never got close?
But I don't know. I don't think so.
No. I saw one up in my dressing room. It was a little Scottish man.
He
was just up there sitting there using my toilet.
Yeah.
Not saying anything, walked out. I mean, it could have been a Scottish man.
I mean, it might just have been a man.
It might have been a man, but it might have been a ghost, mightn't it?
Yeah, well, there's no way.
What was
he
doing up in my dressing room?
Why didn't you put your hand through him?
Oh, because what if he was real?
Sorry, mate, just checking out. Groin first. There we go.
This is a new one I'm interested in about. If you could take one item from any museum or art gallery in the world that you could then own for the rest of your life, that you're allowed to keep, what artifact or painting from a museum or art gallery?
Oh my God! This is only going to show my complete ignorance of having never really been to a museum or an art gallery.
There must be something you like. That you'd be cool. Do you ever go around museums? And it doesn't even have to be a valuable thing. Just them sometimes. Well, I'd like to have that at home.
They do a really nice like apple cake in the National Portrait Gallery. Have you had it? It's really expensive. Yeah. It's like fiver, and I'm like, I'm not having that. But I could get all of that.
Yeah, you could take that home.
Yeah, I'd take that.
It's a good answer. It's a very good answer. I'm kind of thinking a dinosaur maybe now. I went for one of the Lewis Isle chessmen yesterday.
Oh no, dinosaur, that's nice. A brilliant idea, yeah. Well, if I was going to the Science Museum, they've got lots of little funny little things you can press buttons that make noises, haven't they?
You could have Stevenson's rocket. You could have...
No.
You could have the lunar landing module.
God, no. Oh, my kids would love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if you've got space in the house, though.
This one came up yesterday as well, if coincidentally. If you had to invent a fifth season, which two other seasons would you put it in between and what would happen in your new season?
I would definitely have a dry season.
Okay.
No, that's rubbish. I wouldn't have a dry season. I would have a... Christ, that's a tricky one,
it
isn't
is
it?
Hard.
Do you know what? I would quite like a snow... No, here, wait.
Yeah.
Can I decide where the season is?
Yeah.
And it happens between... Jesus. So it happens, and it's how long is this season?
Well, you can choose. I mean, I would say 3 months, because most of them are, but you can have it shorter or longer.
I'm going to have to shorten it.
Okay.
Okay, so I would like to have the snowy season, but it's never too much snow, but just enough snow to make everything look really pretty, but not enough snow that everything stops... And we all hate the public transport and each other, and work becomes a nightmare. But just enough snow that when we go out, we're like, I feel good about myself and my life, and everything is like a little... Like, you know when you see like a little... You know, Christmas, we're always told that it's snowing and there's never snow. I think there should just be a little bit of a snowy season just before Christmas, and then it fucks off. and then at Christmas, we can still be as depressed and disappointed as we always are over that 1 week.
There never is a white Christmas. I would like.
It's actually depressing that every time you watch a show about Christmas, it's always snowing.
Yeah.
That's why I won't let my children watch The Snowman.
There will never be any more snow. You know,
ever again.
In about 10 years, we won't have snow, will we?
I don't think we'll ever have snow.
There's no snow in the Arctic anymore, so that'll be any.
Maybe
UK.
We should have a boating season. Yeah. Given that the rising sea levels.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And then we all have to get like catamarans and what are those boats where you go along on a... What are they called?
Punts.
We could... Punting and kayaking.
You'd need a long pole, I think, to reach the bottom.
Really to reach the bottom. Yeah.
Where we're
just keeps
be.
Going down.
It's going to be a Waterworld season. Like, did you ever see Waterworld, the Kevin Costner
With
film?
Kevin Costner, yeah. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen in my entire life. Did you enjoy it?
I don't know if I've seen it. I'm just so aware of it via all the jokes about it. I don't think I've ever watched it.
Don't watch it.
I'm going to watch it tonight. I'm going to see if it's in my DVD collection in my rented accommodation.
Oh, yeah. Those are great. Yeah. And what have you got in your rented collection?
There is quite a lot of things in there. They've got all Harry Potter. They've got a lot of kids stuff. I'm trying to think what they had. Legally Blonde. I've never seen Legally Blonde. I might watch that.
I've got Billy Elliot.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing.
And
it's good we're at the greatest arts festival in the world and we're considering watching DVDs
in
our houses once our kids are asleep.
Come on.
What has become of us?
I'll be watching something called The Offering.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got no idea what that's about, but it looks very bleak, which suits my mood.
Cool. So, when's your show on?
7:45 at the Monkey Barrel, which is a brilliant venue. Do go and check it out. There's 5 different venues, really, really great comedians there. It is sold out for tonight, but there are tickets for tomorrow.
Good. And will you be touring the show as well?
I am touring the show from February. I will be taking it on tour from between February and May, and the dates will go up on my website shortly. I mean, most of you are like, just spare us the admin, love. We'll Google you if we're interested.
And have you been managed to see anything? I'm imagining it's quite hard to see much more than... Have you been to kids' shows or have you been to adult shows as well?
I saw Jared Christmas's beatbox show for children, which was absolutely fantastic, which is here somewhere at the Assembly. And I saw Jess Fosterkew's show, Hench, which I thought was fantastic. And that's also at the Monkey Barrel. What else have I seen? God, I saw... Marcus Burman do a show. His show is at the Banshee Labyrinth, and it is a show which is he does storytelling and really fantastic illustrations as well. So he's got a big screen at the back, so it's kind of a stand-up storytelling show, which I really enjoyed. And I can't remember what
you're
else.
You're doing very well.
I'm doing pretty well, aren't I?
I've only seen kids shows.
George Egg's show was great.
Oh yeah, George Egg's going to be a guest on a future podcast.
Oh, he was brilliant. His show was fantastic. And I can't remember.
No.
Yeah, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
Are you managing to get out and socialise in Edinburgh? Or
no. No.
I'm getting the early morning and the night shift is what I'm...
I have to go home to babysit... You can't babysit your own children, can you?
That's 4 o'clock onwards. I consider it babysitting in Edinburgh while my wife's out getting... My wife gets drunk. You've done her podcast, haven't you? Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Yeah, Drunk Women Solving Crime.
My job is to go get drunk. Then roll in the middle of the night.
It is a brilliant podcast. If you haven't listened to it, listen to Drunk Women Solving Crime. They get guests to come on, not always comedians. You get drunk, and then they give you, well, obviously a crime, like a historical crime, and you've got to work it out. And it's ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun to do.
It must be a lot of fun. Well, I'm at home looking after the kids.
God, Rich, I can't believe that you're there expected to be a parent. It's an absolute bloody nightmare, mate. How dare she?
Well, it's do get the book when it comes out in September. The Other Mother, Jen Brister. Go and see a show and on tour. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Jen Brister.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming in. We... We'll be back tomorrow. We've got Tony Slattery on tomorrow. I think that will be a very interesting one. Do come along if you can. Thanks very much. Do remember to give someone a scope if you can see the bucket, and I'll see you out there if you're interested. Bye-bye. Thank you. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStrike.com. Producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz at GoFasterStrike.com production. Go to rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping
us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. Do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.